Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in downtown Washington, D.C. And today, for the first time, we are not just broadcasting the show out over 42 stations from coast to coast, not just podcasting it, not just sending it on iTunes and Spreaker and Adore.fm, but we are live video casting on Facebook. So all my Facebook friends who wanted to hear my radio show but don't happen to live in one of the cities where it plays and never really came to my website, marklevinetalk.com, where we've been playing it, well, for a decade now. And some people just want video. They want to see me. They want to know who they're talking with or who they're listening to. And, of course, you can call me at 888-488-MARK to join in the conversation, 888-488-6275. And I'm glad to do, and I want to keep doing this. Assuming this works, and this is a test, we may make some mistakes today, but assuming this video works, I hope to videocast all my shows because I guess it's just easier for some people to watch, particularly if they're on the computer, than just to listen. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, everyone in the 42 stations across the country. Welcome if you're watching on Facebook. And we'll have this also up as a recorded video to watch it. I'm glad this is my first show because I have a very important topic. My topic today is who are the Trumpists? Who are the Trumpeters? Who are the people who support Donald Trump? What causes someone to like to live in an alternative fact universe? Someone who is excited by the prospect of Donald Trump as president. Someone who believes the worst possible things about Hillary Clinton. Someone for whom Trump's message really resonates. I know they're out there. And I realize, yes, I live in Washington, D.C. I live in the bluest of the 51 jurisdictions of the United States. I live surrounded by liberals in Alexandria, Virginia. I'm surrounded by intellectuals. I'm surrounded by people with high degrees, intelligent people, and scientists, and lawyers, and doctors. And it can be very hard, really hard, for someone who's educated, someone who believes in fact, to understand where these people are coming from. And yet, they're a good part of our nation. Donald Trump may well get 40% of the vote in November. And while I do think Hillary Clinton will win, and I don't think we can be complacent about it, because I think the dangers of Donald Trump are real, and we're going to talk about some of those. To me, the fascinating question is, who are these people? Where do they come from? Why would they be so excited by someone who, to me, seems at best, as an entertaining buffoon, someone who clearly doesn't know what he's talking about, and the amusement factor is like watching a bad actor on Saturday Night Live, wondering where they will fail and find. I mean, there is an amusement factor to that. There's an entertainment factor. I get that. That's the best of Donald Trump, and the worst is his message of hate and fear and lies. But who are these people? This is not a question that's new to me. This is a question, actually, I've struggled with my entire life. Have you seen those pictures of the South circa, I don't know, 1930, 1935? You ever seen those pictures of a lynching? There'd be two young black men hanging from the ropes, and around them would be party. White people, mostly men, a few women, celebrating, cheering around the execution of these people without a trial. I have to admit, and I'm not proud of this, although I do think it's important. I've always been kind of fascinated by Nazis. That's not something I'd really like to point out publicly very often. And to be clear, it's not a fascination with Hitler. Hitler, I get. I actually kind of understand that. Jim Jones of Guyana. I kind of get that. Megalomaniac, thinks he's whatever. I think I get Donald Trump. Narcissistic, megalomaniac, just has the mentality of a four-year-old who wants to win all the time. A particularly ill-behaved four-year-old boy. Those people don't interest me. No, I'm interested in the people at Jonestown. I'm interested in the Nazis. I'm interested in the people who support Vladimir Putin in Russia. I'm interested in the people who support Kim Jong-un in North Korea. I've always wondered about what makes authoritarian rulers work. And I admit, I've got a bias here. I'll be very clear. I have a bias towards democracy, towards equality, towards empathy. I see that as the natural state of mankind. It's hard for me to put my mind in the body of someone who hates democracy. And, you know, I admit it. I'm someone who, you know, trained on the Constitution of the United States, right? The Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And, you know, I've long understood that to include women and men of all races and colors and creeds and languages. So I find it odd, really, not just profoundly troubling, but odd, that people would support authoritarianism. They would support prejudice. They would cheer at someone's death. There's a fascinating book on the Holocaust by Daniel Goldhagen. I happen to know Daniel better than most, although I haven't spoken to him in 30 years, because he was my resident tutor at Harvard. A tutor is not someone who helps you when you have trouble with studies. At Harvard, it's just kind of like the person who lives in your dorm. I think there are other names for it in other colleges, the dorm master or whatever. They tend to be a graduate student who's, you know, I was an undergrad and he was a graduate student. He lives in the building and they kind of look out for us. And anyway, Daniel Goldhagen, who is the son of a Holocaust survivor, who's also a very impressive professor in his own right. But Daniel studied what he called in his most famous book, Hitler's Willing Executioners. The ordinary Europeans, and they weren't just Germans, folks, who willingly, happily went through their day taking little children and bashing their heads against the wall, gassing thousands of innocent people, listening to their screams, and then went home to their families. See, when I think of authoritarian rule, and I think if I were living under authoritarian rule, I understand the people who are afraid to speak out. I understand why North Koreans don't rise up and revolt against Kim Jong-un. I understand someone being fearful for their lives, fearful of being killed. I get that. That's not hard for me to understand. Just like it's not hard for me to look at a Holocaust victim and imagine myself in their shoes. Or a black person in the 1930s or the 1830s. Indeed, I give tours in my hometown of Alexandria of the slave market, the second largest in the United States, in my hometown. Talk about the Trail of Tears from Alexandria to New Orleans as the slaves had to march, hands tied and necks in these braces of chain gangs, really, for hundreds of miles, the whips walking from the Old South to the actually crueler New South of Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi. I get that. I know I'm not of that age, and I can't truly understand how awful it was, but I kind of get persecution from the vantage point of the victim. And you know, look, I'm a Southern gay Jewish American, right? I'm used to being in the minority. I'm used to looking at history from the side of the dispossessed. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I think that's how we roll. But looking at it from the side of the oppressor is more interesting to me, perhaps because it's more foreign to me. And I get someone in Nazi Germany or in North Korea who is afraid to speak out for their lives and may not save a life because they fear for their own lives. I get that. I imagine myself in one of those clubs or theaters or schools with some gun-toting maniac. I do it every time I read about Orlando or Charleston or Newtown. And I wonder, would I have the courage to save a life, to risk my life to save a life? And I like to think I would, and I don't know that I would, and I just can't know in case I'm there. But I understand that fear. That's easy for me to understand. What's hard for me to understand is the people who take joy in other people's misery. It's hard for me to understand sadism. In Daniel Goldhagen's book, Hitler's Willing Executioners, it's a several hundred page book. It's an interesting book, cover to cover, lots of facts and statistics and proof that the people who committed the murders in the death camps were not extraordinarily sadistic people with mental illness. They were ordinary people, people who went home to their loving families, who bought their child an ice cream on weekends and went on Monday to killing Jews and gays and the handicapped and maybe some Poles and prisoners of war as well. Monday through Friday, pour the gas in, clean the bodies out, go home and make love to your wife and feed your kids. In fact, many young Germans of that age, they would be older Germans today, the children of the Nazis, had really hard time reconciling. They knew that daddy or grandpa ran the gas chambers or just shot a bunch of babies. But they were loving at home. They loved their kids. And they just couldn't put the two together. The question for me is not someone living in an authoritarian regime who is afraid. The question is, who are the people that bring about the authoritarian regime? Who are the people like those in the 1830s of the United States, the Know Nothing Party, who railed against immigrants and Catholics and truly valued knowing nothing? That was their code. That was their secret phrase, because elitists were bad, education was bad. Who are the people that hate the media, hate science, hate education, think that if you're educated, that's a bad thing because you cease to believe in the, well, lies they tell themselves in their alternative universe? Who are these people? Who are the people that smile at a lynching? All my life, I've been confronted by these people. Like I said, and the prejudice against me, frankly, is very minor compared to against many, many, many Americans. But yeah, as a gay man, yeah, as a Jew growing up in the South, I faced my share of anti-Semitism, of homophobia, absolutely. And I've spent my entire life working to make things better for people. And I think, and this is the heart of the thesis I have today, I think that because I have seen progress, and I am a progressive, I have seen how these citizen movements, some of which I've helped to lead, have made progress, have made lives better for gay people, for Jewish people, for black people, for Latinos, for women who have been mistreated for centuries. How I've seen Martin Luther King's arc of moral universe being long but bending toward justice, that gives me hope. But for people who are born on second base and then retreat to first base, and yeah, I'm talking about uneducated, older white men in America, they see their fortunes declining, at least relativistically. I think that's the source of the hate and anger. I'm going to explain more after the break. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Join me. Help explain this to me.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Donald Trump challenges every aspect of our constitutional democracy. It's not just the attacks American heroes, like Gold Star families, people whose children have gone off to fight and die for America. He challenges our judicial system. Attacking a judge who happens to have been born in the United States of America, for ruling against him on the grounds that the judge has Mexican heritage. Attacking the independence, really, of our judiciary, not based on the ruling, but based on the ethnicity of the judge. He attacks our voting system, claiming before the vote has taken place that it's going to be rigged, but not saying how it's rigged, or why it's rigged, or how to stop it being rigged. The irony is, I've actually worked in the Virginia legislature to make voting more fair. I have worked, for example, to get rid of electronic voting machines because I'm afraid of hacking. That was a specific thing that I had a concern on. Lots of people did. We're going to make it better and to make it easier for people to register to vote and to make more days available. But Donald Trump gives none of that, none of those details, none of we can fix the system. But it's rigged. The Republican primary, he said, was rigged before he won it. Now he says the voting system is rigged without explaining how. He says the Democratic primary was rigged. Some Bernie Sanders voters seem to agree with that, though none of them can say how it was rigged. Were any Bernie Sanders people kept from the polls, or Hillary Clinton people got double votes? Rigged is a very strong term. There are people for whom our democracy, our constitution, our republic can be made better. And there are people who seem to oppose the very idea of democracy, like a free press. Donald Trump is talking about rounding up and putting in jail people in prison that disagree with him. Now, we haven't done that since, well, the Sedition Acts of John Adams in 1798 that caused him to lose badly to Thomas Jefferson in 1800. It's why I've never liked John Adams as a founding father. He wants a religious test in the Constitution to ban all Muslims. That's expressly against the Constitution. It says no religious tests here. But what is it about freedom of religion, freedom of the press, voting, and an independent judiciary that so threatens Donald Trump? And how does that make the Trumpists have similarities to, say, the Putinists, the people in Russia who support the dictator Vladimir Putin? We're going to explore these questions when we come back. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
Now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Today I'm exploring who are the Trumpists, the trumpeters, the people who sound Donald Trump's horn, the people who really love him. Not the Republicans who are having a really tough decision, who recognize that Donald Trump is a buffoon, but, you know, don't want Hillary Clinton for whatever partisan reasons. They don't interest me. I understand those people. Don't always agree with them, but I understand where they're coming from. They're not foreign to me. I'm talking about people, and listen, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm talking about in my home state of Tennessee, where, unlike Virginia, where I currently live, in Tennessee, Donald Trump is winning in a landslide so far. Not in Nashville, where I grew up, kind of a blue island in a red storm, but out in rural Tennessee, out in the rural parts of this country. Oklahoma and Arkansas and South Dakota. Idaho, Wyoming. In these places, Donald Trump's winning by a landslide, and not just against Hillary, but in the Republican primaries and caucuses as well. Who supports Donald Trump, and why? And I guess all my life I reason by analogy. I try to think of similar situations, and I've always wondered who supports authoritarian rule. Not the people who are afraid, not the people who don't fight Kim Jong-un or Putin or the Nazis because they're afraid of getting killed. I get that. I'm talking the people who support them. Who are the white people in 1930s Mississippi who enjoyed a good lynching? Who are they? Who are those angry white faces who you can see in the crowd when a little black girl is being taken to a Arkansas public school? Who are they? Why are they so angry? What do they have to be angry about? Again, Donald Trump, I don't think he's that complicated. He's a person who was born on third base and thought he hit a triple. That's not my expression. I think that was Ann Richards talking about George Bush, but it may be older than that. Donald Trump, by the way, inherited so many millions from his dad. And if you invest what he inherited at the time he inherited it and just put it in the S&P, the 500 most common stocks, he would have more money if he just did nothing than his great real estate career. So I'm not impressed with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is very, very, very impressed with himself. Not so impressed that he's willing to release his tax returns and tell us how he got all this money. But again, he, other than being somewhat amusing and somewhat scary, is not the focus of today's show. The focus is on his supporters, the people who aren't doing well, the coal miners, the people who are afraid of Muslims and Mexicans. Why? As I said, if Donald Trump was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple, and blacks and women and gay people are born somewhere between home base and a mile back from it and have not yet started to get to the place where everyone gets at bat and are just now getting, in my tortured baseball analogy, to first base, I get them too, because even if life has been extremely unfair to women and minorities in different ways, and certainly black folk and immigrants and Muslims and to a different extent to Jews and gay people, and I've seen progress. I've seen progress in my lifetime. I've helped progress occur. I've helped people I know and other people get to have a chance at bat. I've seen progress in my own lifetime. It's amazing. I mean, the marriage equality movement, and this is just one that I worked in intimately, so I know well, 15 years ago did not exist. Gay people opposed it, and now we have full equality, marriage equality, at least in the law nationwide. And I can imagine for blacks in the 1960s, it was exactly the same thing. They could not imagine the end of Jim Crow. And we still have a long way to go in racial relations in America, but the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward progress. And even though blacks in this nation are poorer than whites and have less income than whites and have less asset than whites overall, their improvement since the 60s is real. And since the 30s and since the 1860s, it's real. There is progress. But what if you were born on second base? Not Donald Trump's third base, but born on second base, and now you've moved back to first base. I want to talk about uneducated or uncollege educated rural white men in America. I want to talk about farmers and coal miners. And if you live in a city, you may not know many such people. The people who went and worked in the car factories in Detroit, the white people, who joined unions, who used to be paid enough to be able to afford to buy the cars, but now aren't anymore as jobs get outsourced to Mexico and China and Bangladesh. People for whom one, and yeah, it was the man, one man brings home a paycheck, and that's enough to feed a wife and family and probably buy a house and actually afford college, go to a state school, work a summer job, put yourself through it, and be proud of building yourself up by your bootstraps and not recognizing that Social Security helped your parents and Medicare and that the GI Bill helped you get through college, not recognizing that the roads that you're driving on were paved by the government, really by your fellow Americans helping all of us to get along, not recognizing that blacks didn't have those opportunities and women did not have those opportunities and being gay was criminal. When Donald Trump says he wants to make America great again, I want a reporter to ask him, when was America great? It's a fair question. It's his slogan, right? I mean, it's on every baseball cap at a Trump rally, make America great again. Okay, what does that mean? It means America was once great and we're no longer great. Okay, when were we great? Was it the 1950s? Beaver Cleaver time? When everyone supposedly lived in a nuclear family with mom and dad and the kids and everyone was white and there was no crime and no hardship and everyone was getting their new Frigidaire. And black people weren't seen. And everyone spoke English. I realize it's a mythical time. But is that the time they want to make America great again? Was it the 1980s? The period of Wall Street greed under Ronald Reagan? When was America great, Donald Trump? And why won't anyone ask him that very basic question? Now, I don't think Donald Trump has thought about it at all. I think his slogan is just an empty slogan. He's a salesman. But ask a Trumpist. When was America great? Was it before the era of the politically incorrect? Before people were challenged? Don't say the N-word. Don't call a woman that. Don't say that about gay people. That could be your son or your daughter. Why do you care where a transgender person goes to the bathroom? What do you have against Mexicans? Did this Muslim man ever harm you? Is he a terrorist? Or has his child fought and died for America? When was America great? And what is it about political correctness that makes people so angry? I tried to understand that at the Republican National Convention. I heard Scott Baio get up there and say something to me that I hear more often than probably any other line from conservatives. And that line was, we want people, I'm trying to remember the exact words, not that Scott Baio is this great philosopher, but basically we want, as Mitt Romney said, the makers, not the takers. We want people who contribute to the government and don't just sit around and expect gifts from the government. I don't remember his exact phrase. I'll have to look at it again. But this idea that the people, and it tends to be the white people, folks, the people who contribute to the country and the people who they assume sit back and get all the benefits. And they don't seem to understand that the entire purpose of whether it's affirmative action or whether it's breaking the glass ceiling or whether it's allowing people of different religions and cultures to come here, they don't seem to understand that it's it's a way to give people equal opportunity to succeed, not to put anyone else down. That when people say Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean white lives don't matter. Come on. It means that, hey, traditionally Black lives haven't mattered in America, and they do, and they should, and we have to do something about it. Standing up for someone else's rights does not attack your own. So why is it that someone on second base who retreats to first is so unhappy when there are people who've never even made it to first base?
Because I think we look at life relativistically. We look at our neighbor. We see our neighbor has a nice house and a new car, and we don't have one. And that doesn't seem fair. And if you have this in-group mentality where you only recognize the humanity of people who are like yourself, then you get really nervous about the other people. I've seen this writ large in Russia. There's a reason why Donald Trump has such sympathy for Vladimir Putin. There's a reason why his campaign manager made $12 million helping the dictator of Ukraine. There's a reason why there is such affinity there. Many of you know I used to go on Russian TV. Never let them censor me. That's why I went on until they started to censor me. And in one dramatic moment that you could still find online, they would not let me speak because I was saying that Putin was invading Ukraine. And I fought back and said, just give me 30 seconds of uninterrupted time. And they would not give me 30 seconds. And for 30 minutes, I struggled to get 30 seconds. And they would not give me 30 seconds in 30 minutes. It's an agonizing video if you ever want to watch it. That's not the interesting story. What's interesting in that story is the YouTube comments. The YouTube comments, and there are thousands of them, maybe tens of thousands of them, probably put up by a Russian agent for all I know. I have no idea. They're constantly attacking me for being Jewish. Now, I don't mention I'm Jewish on the show. I have a Jewish last name. They attack me for being Zionist or Jewish, or they use far more severe and insulting language. Why? Why not address my question, which is whether or not Putin is in Ukraine? Why ignore my argument and attack me for being Jewish? Well, because Putin uses Jew hatred, much as the Nazis did, to rally his people around a common enemy and to not focus on the fact that he's putting independent media in jail, the fact that he's got the mafia running the country. Once you understand that, I think you get a good idea of where Trump support come from. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'll get to your calls in just a second. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm trying to understand the Trumpists, and obviously this isn't a question I'm going to answer in here in 1 hour. But I do think part of it is this alternative fact universe. And sometimes you kind of have to prick the balloon and then it suddenly the air explodes. I think back to the time of Joe McCarthy, when Americans really were in fear of communists under every rock and rug. And then someone exposed, finally, Joe McCarthy as a fraud. And suddenly, boom, the air went out of the balloon. I've often talked about, when I talk about Bush v. Gore in 2000 or anything else, that the emperor has no clothes. That story of the little boy who notices that the emperor has no clothes, even though everyone else believes that it's an invisible cloak because the emperor tells them so. But the real question I have is, why do people want simple solutions? And let me just try to quickly explain how I see it, and then I know I got a lot of phone calls. I think there is a certain peacefulness in simplicity. Talking about the complications of the world and why it is that ISIS and Assad and Russia and Iran are in Syria and why it is that climate change is going to cause the oceans to rise and why it is that, well, everyone actually is kind of the same and different all at once, and all the gray that we progressives cherish in diversity and difference, that's confusing and complicating and disturbing to someone who wants a simple mind, who wants Big Brother to take care of them. And they don't really care that Donald Trump lies all the time. They might just laugh at it, but he's the strong man. He's the Big Brother. He will protect us. Read George Orwell's 1984. It's easier to have simple solutions, to have black and white, to have good and bad. It's easier to wrap your mind around, and then you can go raise your children or go out and play baseball. Complexity is unnerving. It happens to be the truth. But this simplicity of loving the people you know and hating the people you don't know, this good and evil dichotomy, just makes people feel safer, I think. Got a lot of phone calls. We don't have time. We're going to continue the show on Wednesday, and we'll give you time for more of your calls. Let me go to Colin in North Dakota on line 2. Hey, Colin, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. Say, I had two thoughts. I had a chance to go home to where I'm from this weekend, and I talked to some Trump supporters. And
in rural North Dakota, right?
Yep, exactly. And I've come up with kind of two thoughts. First of all, I agree with what you said so far, but I think that Fox News and the conservative media have really succeeded in dragging Hillary through the mud. And from what I can tell, a lot of Trump supporters are voting against Hillary, at least in North Dakota. But the second reason, and the most important reason, I think, is that people are afraid of what they don't know. And we lack a lot of diversity in North Dakota. And I think a lot of progressives didn't take the time to explain to John the farmer why diversity is a good thing. And I think they kind of were left out along the way.
And plus, John the farmer is having some tough times economically with
exactly.
Globalization and everything else, and can't understand why, oh, we have a black president, and oh, we have these Mexicans who are coming to America and making it in America, and why aren't I making it? And rather than focus on John the farmer's problems, everyone's focused on all these other people. And John the farmer used to be the backbone and the center of America and the one everyone looked up to, and now they're focused on all these other people, and so they kind of hate the other people. Is that fair? Is that the sentiment?
That's absolutely true. I mean, John the farmer has been the recipient of the farm bill and so much attention, not only in the media, but in Congress. And now other issues are being put on the line, and they're saying, well, you're not paying as much attention to me and my problems anymore.
And that's why, by the way, Hillary Clinton has got to get out there and focus on coal miners and focus on the white working class and focus on the farmer, in addition to, of course, focusing on everyone else that she focuses on. Thank you for your call, and I got to get to another call, Colin, but we're going to do this again on Wednesday. I love the video because it's bringing me a bigger audience, so glad to have you call on the air. Let's go to Heather in Nashville, Tennessee, my hometown. Hey, Heather, how are you?
Just fine, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, no problem. I need a Yale-educated constitutional lawyer to pull out their pocket Constitution.
Got it right here. What can I do for you?
Tell me exactly what the president swears to when he takes his oath, and
or her
like
oath.
can you compare that to Donald Trump's rhetoric, and you know, kind of demonstrate why he's not going to be president?
Well, let's see. I got the oath right here.
I'll hang up.
Sure. Thank you for your call. The president says, and will say on January 20th, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And the problem with Donald Trump is he doesn't seem to have much respect for the Constitution, for an independent judiciary, for a free press, for the fact that there's no religious tests. The Constitution specifically says there shall be no religious test in an office in the United States, to equality for women, which is here, at least women's right to vote, to equal protection under the laws, the 14th Amendment, to due process under the law when he talks about killing the families of terrorists. That's also right here in the Constitution. Donald Trump doesn't seem to understand that there are rules by which we live and that he has to respect. And I think many of his supporters want this strongman rule, want this certainty. It's the same thing that causes Vladimir Putin to be so supported and, frankly, Adolf Hitler. But we need to understand why, and I'm exploring this question again on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Check out my website, marklevinetalk.com.